All right, welcome to another episode of Closers or Losers. My name is Jeremy Miner. I'm the founder, recently demoted. I used to be the chairman, and I am talking with the new chairman, Matt Wright,
yes,
of the company.
And I allow you to speak.
Congratulations, man. I'm no longer the chairman. Now you get to be the CEO and chairman. I don't know how that happened. I'm just the boring founder now. But hey, welcome. I see you're working from home today. You're not even in the office. What's going on?
Tuesdays and Thursdays, man.
Now that you're the chairman, you don't have to work in the office. You work from home.
I'm considering not working at all.
You're retiring. I love it. All right. So we wanted to, you know, every week we try to mix it up, you know, give you a little bit of overview of certain things. And other weeks, you know, we want to, you know, you're the salesperson. Like, well, what are some things you can say? What can you ask? You know, that's pretty much reserved for our clients and our virtual training courses and group training, all that stuff. But we give you little nibbles. So we're going to give you a couple little nibbles today, a couple little hors d'oeuvres. Matt, what was the question? What was the single most important thing or something that you wanted to go over?
Status framing. Okay. So I guess it's like, how do you kind of align? So, like, you know, we sell all different types of prospects. And I think one of the things that we get a lot from our clients is like, I don't know how to deal with these people that make lots of money, or I don't know how to deal, you know, like, how do you switch from a prospect that, you know, if you're doing B2B, a business that does, you know, $20,000 a month, you're talking to sort of a solopreneur.
Is that a right? Business? Okay, that's like a solopreneur, right?
You know, and then from there, immediately switch to, you know, like an enterprise level sale where you might be talking to the VP of finance or the CFO who's making, you know, tons of money and has a very important job and all that kind of stuff. Like, how do you make those switches and how do you align with both people? Because you don't want to come in with this super high status to the solopreneur and make it seem like you're so much better than them, but also you can't take that same energy to the CFO or the CEO of a multinational billion-dollar company, you know?
So what we train our clients, and it doesn't matter the industries, we train them on something. There's a couple different techniques I'm going to show you, but we train them on something that's called a status frame, okay? So as an overview of what a status frame means, any type of conversation or any interaction you enter in that's a sales conversation or interaction, you have to come in and meet that prospect at least on the same ground as they are, even in that first 10, 20, 30 seconds. Now, what do I mean by that? Okay. Anytime you come in and you say here's what you don't want to do. Anytime you come in, okay, and you come in and you're like, hey, how are you doing today, John? Like, oh, how's your day going? Oh, that's so cool. And you start, you know, asking the same questions that every salesperson that's ever tried to sell them anything is asking. It immediately does what? It starts to lower your status. Okay. And why does it lower your status? Because they associate you with every other salesperson who's ever talked to them. And you don't want to be in that crowd because most of those salespeople, they have a negative experience from. They've said no to 90% of those people. So immediately, if you're asking the same type of questions, like, how are you doing today? You might as well, in the prospect's mind, here's that how they interpret those type of like chit chat in the beginning of a call. Basically, they interpret you saying that as like, hey, I'm just trying to get you to like me, so you're going to buy my stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what people interpret that. Like, everybody listening to me, when a salesperson asks you how your day's going, that's what goes on in your mind. You're like, oh, well, they're just trying to get me to like them, so I'll buy from them, okay? And that's
absolutely
the place that you want to put yourself in. So what that does is that lowers your status in the prospect's brain. And so that means they view you as just like another salesperson is trying to sell them. So you want to come in to that conversation at least on the level ground as that prospect, where they view you at least at their level. Now, when you get into that conversation with the questions you ask and the tone and how you bridge from question to question, and you get them to think deeper about the questions you're asking, and you start to pull out pain and problems, guess what happens? Your status starts going up in their head. And they start to view you as having a much higher status in the subject you're talking about than they are. And people only buy, unless it's like a TV, but you know, high-end products, they only buy from people who they feel have a much higher status about that subject than they do. That's why you can go into any conversation. I'll give you an example of this. Like, let's say you run into a celebrity. You run into Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I've met the dude back in 2013 at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood. And I'll give you a status frame story. So a lot of my friends were like, hey, Rock, we're such big fans. Can we get your autograph? And he just kind of, he signed autographs, but then he kind of just blew them off. I never asked for an autograph. And I just started talking to him about like his business ventures and stuff like that. We started talking to like freaking 2 hours. I never talked about his movies. He was asking me questions. He found out I was in sales. He's like, yeah, I've got this thing. You know, my guy's going to pitch it. Like, what do you think he should do? And like, literally by the end of that, he viewed me as a much higher status in the subject I was talking about, which is sales. So that built status in his brain that I had a much higher conceptual understanding of that subject. And people only buy from people who they feel understands their unique situation the most, and that's going to get them the best result. That's what I mean by status frame. My friend had no status with him. In fact, they lowered their status by asking for their autographs right up front and like being giddy little girl, like little girlfriends or something like that. Like, oh my gosh, The Rock, you know, just lowers the status because he's used to everybody doing that. And so he doesn't respect them. It's not necessarily that he doesn't like them. He just puts them in a much lower status.
It's not going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, they're just fans.
Yeah.
See, it's the same thing with the prospect. You don't want to be viewed as a lower status by asking like silly rhetorical salesy questions, like how are you doing today and that type of stuff in the beginning, because it just lowers you down. You want to start at least at the same status, okay, and then move that up throughout the conversation. And by the end of that sales process, whether you sell B2C or B2B, they view you at a much higher status than them and then the subject you're talking about. That's what I mean by status.
Can you get then take that too far where your status is too high?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'm not saying you come across as a prick, like, oh, I know everything, but your questions allow them to view you as like, wow, this person really knows what's going on. You're not telling them everything, but your questions are triggering them to think deep about their issues and their problems and where they want to go.
That can you give us an example of how you would open a conversation to where you would, you know, in order to kind of establish that initial status?
Yeah, for sure. I'll give you an industry-specific example. I did a keynote for this company. I'll pull up one of their sales structures from their industry. So I just did a big keynote for a group of probably top, I wouldn't even say they're like above the top 1% real estate investors in the United States. I mean, even to be in this room, you know, these guys are all worth like tens of millions of dollars, even to be in the room.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was a $50 million net worth.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of investors in the very back that typically invest like $3 to $4 billion a year in real estate.
Yeah, I was
so, you know, they're a little bit high status, right? So when you get on call, like say in that industry, because that's like, you know, real estate, they're calling, you know, their salespeople are calling distressed properties, trying to get them to accept lower offers to sell them the home, and they either wholesale it out or flip it to make a profit, or hold on to it for long-term rentals, or maybe they Airbnb it out for short-term rentals or whatever, right? So they have to convince the homeowner to accept their lower offer than what the homeowner thinks that they're gonna get from it. Now, the problems the homeowners have that they talk to is they might be going through a divorce and you know, it's getting nasty and they've lost one income, they can't afford the house, it's gonna go into foreclosure and it's gonna destroy their credit. Now, that's a problem they help solve. It could be a landlord that, let's say they have a property they feel like is just a money pit and they're continually putting repairs into it. They're losing money every month. Tenants aren't paying half the time, so they just want to get rid of the property. It could be a property owner that, you know, let's say they're married and the wife loses her job and half the income goes out. Now they can't afford this big, nice house anymore. So now it's going to go into foreclosure and destroy both of their credit. So there's these problems that they solve by doing this, okay? So instead of getting on there like, hey, how's it going? So let's say it first typically goes to like an inside sales agent in that industry who kind of qualifies them to see if they're really looking to sell. Then it goes to what's called an acquisition agent, which is really the quote unquote closer. And the closer has like a discovery call. So that's typically booked on Zoom or at the house. So let's say it's on Zoom or something like that. Or it could even, let's say it's an outbound lead, because sometimes the person doing the first call will just qualify them and say, hey, somebody will be in touch, you know, named Tyshawn in the next 2 days. So they're just expecting a call. So instead of getting on there like, how you doing? How's it going? Hey, is John there? Hey, yeah, John, it's just Jeremy Miner. It looks like you talked with my assistant, Tiffany, yesterday about looking at possibly selling your home at 55 Willow. She had mentioned that you guys were going through a divorce and you kind of wanted to, you wanted to make sure the home didn't go into foreclosure, right? Okay, good. Yeah, and really, like, I was curious, though, like, when you, and we'll go through some details here, I've got some questions, but when you spoke with Tiffany yesterday, what was it that she went over with you that really, I guess, attracted your attention? Well, Tiffany was saying this, and you guys could do this. Okay, now this is where you go into what's called a status frame. This right here, what I'm about to say. Okay, now Tiffany had mentioned to me that you might be possibly interested in receiving an offer on the property. I would say the first part of this call, it's pretty basic. It's really more for us to find out more about the property you have now, like kind of the condition it's in, really when and really why you're even looking to possibly sell besides the divorce, just to see if we could do something good for you. And then towards the end of the call, if you feel that it, you know, that it might be what you're looking for, we can talk about possible next steps. Would that help you guys? Oh, sure. Okay, for example, can you walk me through, and then boom, I'm right into my first situation questions.
Okay.
I noticed I didn't talk about the weather. I didn't talk about who won the game last night. I didn't say how their day was going, because your prospects know that chit-chat just means, like I said, I'm just trying to get you to like me so you buy my stuff. Just that there.
I think the tonality in that is super important. So can you break down the tone that, can you break down the tonality that you're using there?
Yeah. So even the first things out of my mouth, hey, is this John? Oh, hey, yeah, John, it's just Tyshawn. Now, why would I say the word just? Some sales trainers would be like, you can never say the word just because it downplays you. You got to sound really important and you got to be more posture yourself. Well, the problem is that your prospects don't care if you posture yourself. Like, they don't, they're like, oh, the salesperson is posturing himself. I must listen now. Like, they are in full control of hanging up the phone or staying on with you. You have zero control on that unless you can disarm them and get them to let their guard down.
Yeah.
So the reason why I say is just, you know, Jeremy Minor is because the word just implies
familiarity.
They already know you. That they're already, it's just Uncle Bob. Oh, yeah, it's just Uncle Bob. Or, yeah, it's just Kevin. I'm your neighbor down there. Oh, yeah, Kevin.
It's just lowering that initial.
It's
hey, you're supposed to know who I am.
It's lowering the guard. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially on a cold call or outbound lead who doesn't know you. Now, if you've already talked with them, you don't say the word just, because in a sense that does downgrade you. But initially, especially on a cold call or an outbound lead, I have to get them to lower their guard down. So the word just implies familiarity. Like you said, they should already know you. Okay.
Yeah.
Just formal, right? Looks like you talked with, and you can say this fast. If you say it fast, it sounds scripted, like a salesperson. You're nervous. You have anxiety. And so that triggers a prospect to go into fight or flight mode. Okay.
Okay.
And so when I say, looks like you had spoke with my assistant, Tiffany, I think yesterday about possibly looking at selling the property at 55 Willow. Now, why would I say possibly selling? Why wouldn't I say, looks like you talked to her about selling the property? Well, I didn't say I was going to sell it. Like, I just want to see what offer you're
going to make. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See,
I'd say, I think one of the beautiful things about that, you know, this is the way I interpret it, is like, you sort of never want to be wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you're wrong, then like people will push back and then they think that they're not being listened to. So if you say, you know, looking at possibly selling the property, it's like, no, and like, even if they say no, it's like, it's sort of like a, oh, you look at possibly, like, you're not wrong.
Yeah, you're being in the middle. You're neutral. It's a neutral word. You're not negative, but you're not assumptive. You cannot be assumptive that quick in a conversation because you have zero credibility or trust with the prospect. They don't know you from Adam. So when you say like, she said you were going to, you wanted to sell the home. Well, I didn't say I wanted to, like, I'm just looking around. Now your lay down sales might say, yeah, I'm really interested. But that's like, what, 5% of the people you talk to?
Yeah.
The other 95%, especially if they're an A-type, they'll push back when you assume. They're like, well, I didn't say I was going to sell it. I just want to see what you're offering. But by me putting just that one word, possibly looking at selling the property, they're not going to be like, nope, I'm not possibly interested in doing that. They can't say that. It just neutralizes. You don't have any resistance, all right? So I don't want to compete against resistance. Why would you want to be a salesperson and trigger resistance where the wall goes up? And now you got to work on getting the wall back down. It just makes it hard. Like, why do you make selling hard? Make it easy.
Right?
And then you're like, possibly at selling your house on 55 Willow. And I just had time I just had a few minutes before my next appointment to get back to you. Now, why would I say, I just had a few minutes before my next appointment to get back to you? Did I get you at a bad time? Why would I say Just had a few.
Makes you seem like you're busy, you're doing things, you're moving, you're shaking.
Busy, doing things, and it makes them feel like I'm not going to take a lot of their time.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm going to take more than a few minutes, but in the beginning, I have no credibility or trust yet. So another way to get them to lower their guard is to think I'm not going to take a lot of their time. Now, you're going to notice 3, 4, 5 minutes in the call, they lose track of time because your questions, you're bridging from question to question, and it sounds so conversational from where you're going that they just lose track of time and they just keep going with it. And 30 minutes later, they're still in there. They haven't even thought about the time. Okay. You're going to notice that when you do that, right? That's why we do that. All right. And I just had to sell your property on 5-5 Willow. She had mentioned something about you guys were kind of going through a divorce. You know, you didn't want the home to go into foreclosure and ruin your credit, right? See how I'm already putting in the end result.
The consequences, yeah.
The consequences and the end result. See, with this type of sale.
But it's done in a matter of like, this is the information of which you've told us.
Yeah.
I'm just going over.
I'm repeating back. See, I'm already getting them thinking results-based thinking. Remember, you're not selling the thing. You're selling the results of what that thing does. Like if I was calling for solar, I wouldn't be like, you were possibly looking at buying solar panels. I'm not selling solar panels. Possibly looking at ways to like lower your electricity bill, right? See, that's what I'm selling. I'm not selling the solar panels. I'm selling them lowering the bill of electricity and then locking it in where they don't have a payment anymore.
So it's the outcome that happens, yeah.
Are we selling the outcome or the result? So you get them, that very first question already gets their mind into thinking results-based thinking over price or cost-based thinking. Then I go into that frame, okay? Now, I would say the first part of this call, it's pretty basic. Now, why would I say the first part of this call is pretty basic? Why would I downplay the call?
I guess just to lower their resistance. Nothing that you're not going to start deep diving into all their personal matters.
Yeah, they don't feel like I'm going to put sales pressure on them.
Hmm.
The first part of this call, it's pretty basic. So you lower their guard. It's all about lowering their guard so they open up. If we can't lower their guard, they don't open up. Even the very best questions, they just stay surface level with you and they never go below the surface. That's where the sales
jujitsu.
Sales jujitsu. I would say the first part of this call, you know, it's pretty basic. It's really more for us to find out, you know, more details about the property, like, you know, the condition it's in and really when and really why you might be looking to sell, just to see if we could do something for you. And then towards the end of the call, you know, if you feel that it might be what you're looking for, you know, we can talk about, you know, possible next steps. Does that help? You're never going to have anybody says, nope, it would not help me to talk about possible next steps.
Your tone is very meandering.
In what way? What do you mean?
Like it's very like, okay, so it's slow, but you also don't pause. I've noticed. It's like, so we're looking at some possible next steps, and there's sort of like a very like methodic cadence to it.
It's when I get into the conversation, there's going to be other parts of that conversation where I'm going to have more of a concerned tone. And then other parts, I'm like, well, more skeptical tone. And then there's other parts of it where I'm going to be like, okay, but I'm not understanding, like a curious tone, or I don't understand. So, but in the first part, I'm very low key, I'm relaxed, I'm calm, I'm neutral. And that triggers them to let their guard down. You're going to notice once you do this with the right tone, you have very few people that ever throw out any sales resistance. It's like hard for them to throw out sales resistance. It's not like your leads you're talking to wake up in the morning, they're like, you know what, when the salesperson calls, I'm going to go into fight or flight mode and I'm going to resist them. They don't think that. Mm-hmm. What you are saying and asking and how your tone is coming across is triggering them to react that way. And as salespeople, mm-hmm. once we understand that we are the ones triggering them to throw out resistance and we are triggering them to throw out objections, once you learn what you're saying is triggering that, you eliminate it and you tweak that and change that.
I also think, like, if people don't think that you have an ulterior motive, they're just they want to talk about themselves and their problems.
Yeah.
I was on my personal trainer had a Christmas party for all of his clients yesterday. And me and my wife, we are his clients. So we went, and it was actually on a boat, right? Because one of his clients owns a boat.
You and your boats out there in Sydney.
But boats are very big in Sydney because Sydney Harbor is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I've been there, man.
So I went out and I was like, I'm going to NEPQ everyone and I'm just going to see what happens. I just went like, I'm not going to talk about myself at all under any circumstance. And I'm literally just going to ask people questions And because like I just didn't seem to have any ulterior motives, I got so much information out of those people. I would go, so what do you do for work? You know, and they go, oh, this, this, this. I go, how long have you been doing that? Okay, what caused you to get into that? Do you like what you do for work? Amazing. Yeah. What do you like about it? Is there anything you'd change about, I don't know, what you do for a living if you could? Oh, tell me about that. Right? And I reckon I convinced four people to start side hustles.
Right. I like that.
Right. But like, it was just very interesting. Like the openness that people and the comfort that they immediately had because somebody was just asking them questions about them in a way that didn't seem to have any ulterior motive because they didn't want anything from them.
It sounds conversational, right? Because if you sound scripted in asking your questions, on the flip side, they're going to feel like you're interrogating them like an FBI agent. And they're going to resist that. Like, hey, enough with the questions. Just tell me how much it's going to cost on tape if I'm interested. So what you're doing is you're making a conversation because you're using what are called verbal cues. Like, when they're talking, you're like, interesting. Okay, but what happened when you, and see that verbal cue, that but what happened leads into the next question. That's called NEPQ bridging into the next question. So it sounds natural where they just open up. It sounds like a conversation you're having with your best friend at church or something or at a baby shower or something.
That's why it's important you do have some sort of vocal lead in when you want to, especially if you want to interrupt and ask a question. I tend to use vocal fry, right?
Yeah.
Someone says something, I go, sorry, you'd mentioned before.
Yeah, it's good.
Right? So if I want to enter, like I vocal fry into a stutter, right? So it stops them. Because they're like, oh, he's trying to say something. And then from there, I ask them a question to get them back on track.
Can you unwrap that for me? I'm not understanding. I like
exactly.
That. Now, let's go back to that frame real quick. So I want to make sure everybody's not confused. Why did I say towards the end of the call, if you feel that it might be what you're looking for, we can talk about possible next steps. The words might be and possible are neutral words.
Very neutral.
Very neutral. You're not negative. But you're not assumptive. You don't want to say, now at the end of the call, if you feel like it's a good fit and we feel like it's a good fit for us, I'm going to show you some next options on what we can offer for the house. And you can either say, yes, this is for me, or no, it's not. Is that fair enough? That's okay. But it a lot of times.
And who are you emulating there, Jeremy?
Is that fair enough? It triggers a lot of sales resistance and especially a lot of A types because they know at the end you're going to try to do what? Pressure them.
Yeah,
that's just what that's how they interpret that. But if I say, towards the end of the call and I put it on them, if you feel that, that it might be what you're looking for, we can talk about possible next steps. Does that help? Everybody will say, yeah, that would be good. You're going to notice that everybody says that. Oh, yeah, that would be good for sure. There's no resistance or not. I didn't say I was going to buy. You do the other thing and they're like, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about it. A lot of times when you say that other frame, they're going to say, well, I don't know. I need to think about it. I got to talk. I'm not ready to make a decision today. You'll trigger that a lot with that other frame. Go ahead.
When I was a sales guy, before I learned NEPQ, I did the sales for this LinkedIn lead generation company. Yeah. I was doing very well. I was making a fair few sales. And the guy goes, no. You have to, on the discovery call, you have to tell them they need to make a decision on the sales call. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, man. Like, I've been doing sales for years. He's a successful business owner. I was like, all right, I guess I'll try it. And then I was like, it makes sense. And he was like, you don't make it a thing. You just go, on the next call, we're going to be asking you if you feel like it's right and we feel like you're a good fit, then we'll offer you support on the program. And all we ask is that you come prepared to make a decision, right? And I was like, I wrote it out like as well as I possibly could.
Right.
And for a 2-week span, I had a 100% no-show rate to sales call.
And you know why now, right?
I know exactly why. And that guy is now a sales trainer.
Oh boy, that could be a problem. Yeah, that's, early on in my sales career, I learned that there was big differences in skills that I could learn from different people. Not all skills have the same result at the end of the day.
Take their advice, have their life.
Exactly. All right, man. I think that's good. We give him a little bit of couple hors d'oeuvres, little appetizers, little nibbles today on that. A
couple of appetizers, as they would say at Applebee's.
Apple teasers. Hey, see, you're Americanized. You're an Australian that's Americanized. Now I love it. So, all right, guys, thanks for being on. We'll see you on next show. Now, you want to make sure you go join the free Facebook group if you haven't done all that. Sometimes people forget. They're like, Jeremy, where do we go to learn more? The first step for you is we'll give you a few more nibbles, a few more hors d'oeuvres. and one of our free Facebook
groups. Little ones.
Go to salesrevolution.pro, salesrevolution.pro. Right when you join, that's really easy. We let you join it for free. Check your Facebook Messenger. We'll have somebody in our team message over to you a free training called the NEPQ 101 mini course. And we just break down a little bit of some different questions you can use for different sales situations to help you sell more. And we go live in there two, three, sometimes four times a week, different trainings, different Q&A, subject matter trainings, a lot more than we do here on the podcast for sure. And then you want to start learning more advanced training, you know, besides the freebie stuff. Because that's only going to get you a certain level. Just message us in the Facebook group and our team will message you back some different training for your industry if you want to make a lot more money. Matt, thanks for being on. I appreciate it, dude.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Bye.
Hey, guys, if you enjoy these, join our